Tweet at Today SOR.
They call it the gift of life, and the man sitting opposite me can testify to the wonderful and positive difference that an organ transplant can make, giving renewed good health to somebody who has been very, very sick. 5 years ago, and after decades of illness, Seamus Eager got a heart transplant in the Mater Hospital in Dublin. Good morning, Seamus, and you're very welcome to the studio.
Good morning, Sean.
Now, I gathered that there was heart weakness in your family. Effectively, your parents and several of your uncles died from heart trouble. But in your own case, you got a belt fairly early in life.
Yeah, I was only about 38 years of age, and having been active all my life playing football, I was still actually playing football around that stage. Not as often. I wouldn't have trained as often as I used to. But I got a pain in my shoulder. It wasn't what you see on the TV where you grab your left hand and pains in the chest. It was just a simple pain in the shoulder. It stayed there, so I went to the hospital. They stuck some machines on me and they told me I was having a heart attack, and they just knocked me out straight there and then. It was only a very slight heart attack, but the damage that was done to the muscle in the heart was not in keeping with the slightness of the heart attack itself.
So how did things develop from there on?
That was about 1988. I was fine with medication for about 3 years. And in 1991, I started to develop sort of stuff around my chest, which I wasn't particularly happy with. Went to a GP who referred me to a cardiologist, Peter Crean, in the Blackrock Clinic. Went through the usual things then of having stress tests, blood tests. Ended up having an angiogram and woke up from the angiogram on, I remember it was the Friday before Patrick's Day, 1991. A lady called Eilish McGoffrin, a surgeon, was standing over me and said, "You've got all your arteries blocked up. If you have a heart attack today, you'll probably die. We're doing you on Wednesday morning, triple bypass." So I went, had a triple bypass. Being as fit as I was only in for 6 or 7 days. Got out, and for 10 years then, I was absolutely fine.
You were doing normal things. You were fairly active. You play a lot of golf, I know that. But also, you were training football teams, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, when I moved down to Kilcoole in 1989, I became involved with Greystones United fairly shortly after that. My son was playing for Greystones United. A manager didn't turn up one night and he asked me would I look after the team, and I did, from under-8s to under-18s after that. But I mean, I had a big involvement in football, and anyway, I always wanted to put something back into it. And I was fit. I mean, I was playing golf, I was playing table tennis, pretty much doing anything that I wanted to do.
So you got 10 good years with the bypass, the triple bypass.
Absolutely.
What happened then?
It was around early May-ish of 2001, I developed this little cough. And I went to the doctor because I was persistent, wasn't going away. I went to the doctor and he put me on antibiotics, and the antibiotics took the cough away. But as soon as I stopped the antibiotics, it came back, but came back worse. He gave me more antibiotics, came back worse again. I eventually ended up going to the likes of Charlemagne Street for testing for allergies to see what it was. And eventually I was told I was cardiac asthmatic, which is normally in keeping with sometimes when you have a bypass, it can develop. But I was coming back on a flight in August, and during from the time in May to August, I felt myself deteriorating to the point where I was gone very big, put on an awful lot of weight. And on the flight back from Spain, I was having difficulty breathing. I always remember it was a Wednesday evening. Thursday morning, I bypassed everybody myself and went into the Blackrock Clinic. The lady in charge of cardiology knew me quite well, explained the situation to her. So she managed to get another doctor to sign off on tests to be done, like an echo, x-ray, bloods and stuff. And she didn't let me out of the hospital. My body was absolutely full of fluid. And that Thursday evening, they took me in. They weighed me when I went in, put me on diuretics, IV. And on Saturday morning when they weighed me, I was 14 kilos lighter.
Good heavens, that's a huge amount.
Huge amount. I spent probably about 3 or 4 days. I could have slept in the toilet. I was in and out of it that often. I would have known it because I was looking like the Michelin man when I went in. And you could actually hear fluid going around my body. But my lungs were also full of it. So, I mean, I hadn't slept properly for a long time.
So at that stage, clearly you were heading into deeper trouble.
But one of the last things I did was we had a meeting with Peter Crean, and I asked him the situation. I said, "Look, what's going to happen?" And he says, "Well, you'll be fine with the medication you're on, but at some stage in the future, you will have a major episode." And it wasn't me, it was my wife, Elizabeth, asked, "What sort of an episode?" "More than likely transplant," he said. if not worse. And by worse, I took that you'd probably die.
But in the meantime, they took a certain precaution, was it, in 2004?
2004, they put one of these new defibrillators into my chest to make sure that if the heart stopped, it would naturally kick itself back in.
And then how did that go?
That never went off, I have to say. I was fine again for another 2 years. But in 2006, I noticed myself that I was starting to pick up bugs, flus. If that was going, I was getting it. I could get up at 9 o'clock in the morning, and by 11 o'clock, I could be stretched out on the sofa feeling absolutely dreadful. And I started to attend the Blackrock Clinic an awful lot more at that stage than I used to.
So the defibrillator never kicked up. But in the meantime, as you say, your condition got worse. When did they say a transplant is actually essential here?
In 2006, I was sent to the Mater Hospital under Professor Wood to be assessed for transplantation. And I spent a week, maybe 10 days in the matter being assessed. I went through the full range of tests, including psychological. It's a big part of it that you can cope with it in your own head, that you're going to be transplanted. They phoned me and told me that I was going to be on the transplant list as an early listing. I mean, I was still well enough to work and walk around. I mean, I wasn't debilitated in any way.
How long did it take before you got the first call? Because there was a false start, wasn't there, Seamus?
There was. I had no call whatsoever from 2006 up to 2008, May 2008. And I was actually in Dunstores on a Saturday afternoon. I wasn't allowed to travel, but my wife was heading towards Spain for a week's holidays. Got a phone call. She asked, will I send out an ambulance? I said, no. I said, I have my car here and Elizabeth's here. We'll drive over. And we got to the hospital about maybe 4:30, 5 o'clock. You were prepared. You got ready. I mean, getting ready is they do a lot of blood tests. They test you. They gown you up. They shave you. They put on the body antiseptic. Like you're ready to go down to theatre if things work out. It's about 8:30, 9 o'clock that evening. I was told it wasn't going ahead, that it wasn't suitable.
What was that like to have to be told that? Oh,
the week after that was the worst week of my life. I mean, I didn't go to work. And I'd be normally a very positive type person. I mean, right through this, I've always said I'd be positive about it. But that really, really cracked me up.
So that was 2008. And what was the period after that like as well? Not just the initial week. You had a bad time over Christmas, did you?
Yeah, I mean, I got over that. I mean, like, sometimes you just have to say, OK, get up and get on with it. I mean, that's the way it is. And I mean, I run my own business. Coming to the Christmas time 2008, just before Christmas, again, I picked up another bug and I wasn't feeling that great. But because it was Christmas, I was trying to put it off on my feet. And certainly on Christmas Eve, I wasn't particularly well and I went to bed early. Got up Christmas Day and felt really, really poorly. Didn't eat much of a Christmas dinner. Was back in bed by about maybe 9:30, 9 that night. Stevens's Day, I got up and I phoned the Blackrock Clinic. I felt that bad. And I was lucky enough that they contacted Peter Crean, who was kind enough, again, as I said, to come in and look after me and got me into the hospital on Stevens's Day. Straight back onto IV, antibiotic stuff. And that was the first stage. I had the stuff called the butamine, which helps the heart, the muscle of the heart pump.
So having had that false start in 2008, you got a better outcome in the following year. 2009, the big thing happened.
I did. I was actually in the Blackrock Clinic, not well again. And I'd been in about 5 or 6 times by this stage, not feeling well. On the Tuesday night, Elizabeth was just about to go home and I got a phone call to say that they had an offer of a heart, that an ambulance was on the way for me, which it duly did. So we got all our gear together and went over to the Mater Hospital. My son James was back in Kilcool. He got up to the hospital and we sat there and about 4 o'clock in the morning, we were told that it wasn't going ahead. They sent Elizabeth and James home and they gave me something that made me go off to sleep. And I slept till about maybe 8 o'clock the next morning. And I was going back to the Blackrock Clinic till Jimmy McCarthy, one of the surgeons, came in to me and said, OK, look, I'm holding on to you. There's something else happening. May happen, may not, but I don't want you going back and have to bring you back again. So about 1 o'clock, the coordinator, Zita, came in and she actually told me, said, look, we have the offer. The team are going out to examine the heart to make sure it's compatible and they've done all the bloods and that. You might want to tell Elizabeth and James if you want to come back in again. So they came back in, they got in about 3:30, 4 o'clock. And at 5:30, Zita came in and told me it was going ahead and that I'd be in theatre within an hour, which I was.
What kind of thoughts went through your head at that moment?
I would have run into the theatre. You know, it's still very emotional for me, I have to say. I remember going through the electronic doors on the trolley and I was actually so thankful.
It was a feeling more of happiness and relief than a fear.
Yeah, relief, definitely relief. In March, when Freddie Wood told me I was going on the heart, wanted me to go on the heart lung machine, I sort of sat down. I looked at the whole situation. I said, he thinks there's not long left here. I was able to cope with it. I coped with it in my head. In actual fact, I remember I went back to work that day. I got a piece of paper and I wrote down all the stuff where everything was. I will made already by that stage. Anything of value, like, I mean, that would be needed for a probate, for example, in the event of my death, I did it. Phoned the solicitor, told him what it was, put it away. And I said, fine, whatever happens now happens, because I wasn't going on any heart and lung machine. I said, at least this way I can control a little bit of my own destiny.
And did you continue with your golf? Did you continue with your day's work after that?
Ish. Okay, I mean, I did what I could, but it wasn't always feasible.
So the doors went back, in you go. How did things proceed from there?
Well, I wouldn't have known much after that, because before I hit the doors, I was out, gone. They had obviously hit me with something. Freddie Wood came out about 2 o'clock in the morning and said, because of the previous bypass, they were having trouble stopping the bleeding coming from the arteries, which is can be quite normal when you've had this type of thing done before. And that they were going to take me out of theatre. My chest was still open. The heart was in place, but you couldn't close up until they stopped the bleeding. My body was starting to get cold in theatre, which wouldn't have been helping. So they told Elizabeth and James to go home and that they would give them a call, but they were unlikely to bring me back in until about 5 or 6 in the morning. As things turned out, I was only an hour or so, I believe, back in the ICU when the bleeding stopped, and they brought me straight back in, closed up, and I think it was around 5, half 5 in the morning. They gave Elizabeth a ring to tell her everything was fine, that I was back and closed up and everything was grand.
And did you feel any way better or any different?
Oh, yeah,
did you get worse before you got better?
No, you feel much better very, very quickly. Like you're breathing, for example. You can breathe. You know, you're actually there sitting. God, I can actually breathe. You know, I mean, you're on a lot of drugs and morphine and stuff like that for pain, particularly around the chest area. I mean, this would have been the second time my breastbone had been broken, so it was quite sore and you wouldn't have been moving a lot. But you knew you were alive.
And grateful for the fact, I'm sure. So how did things then develop over the following, say, year or thereabouts? Was it tough or was it all good?
For me, it was extremely tough. And I would make the point that each individual's transplant is their own individual plan. What happened to me may not necessarily happen to anybody else, just in case there's anybody out there that thinks they're going to start developing. I mean, I had a ferocious amount of difficulty in the first 14 months. I suffered rejection, and the normal treatment for rejection is IV steroids, 3 days running, 50 milligrams, which is a big dose of steroids, but it kills off rejection. But rejection came back again, and I eventually ended up having radiotherapy treatment in the matter for it, 4 or 5 sessions. But in doing that, they knocked my white cells out. So in essence, I should have really been in the hospital, but I didn't want to. They treated it by building the white cells back up again with medication. But for 14 months, I wasn't allowed to go into football matches or family functions, weddings, anything like that. You were pretty much at home. My highlight of the day would have been a walk on the beach in Kilcool.
So what about now, Seamus? Here you are, 5 years on with the new heart. What is life like for you?
It's super, Sean. I mean, I do a full day's work. I run my own business. I have 2 offices and I play golf. I played golf yesterday. I play lawn bowls now.
Yeah, you've been to the transplant games, haven't you?
I have. I've been to 2 heart and lung Europeans. And I've been to 2 World Games now, World Transplant Games. Managed to win a silver at lawn bowling, which I had just taken up out at Greystone's Lawn Bowling Club. And I had won a bronze in the team event in the golf. Unfortunately, my back gave up in the singles and I had to retire in the 13th hole.
Well, good man's excuse, no doubt. And do you think of your donor from time to time, Seamus?
Yeah, all the time. You know, I mean, there's never a day goes by that you don't think of it in some way. On the anniversary of my transplant, I always send a little note down, a card, just to recognise that the time it is while I'm alive. You know, and it's a recognition of the donor that I actually try and send just a little note down, and at Christmas time.
But are you known to them? Is the donor known to you, or how does that work?
I would write a little note and put it in a card. I give it to the coordinator up in the Mater Hospital, and she would give it to the coordinator over in Beaumont, that would give it, send it on then to the donor family.
I wouldn't want to let the moment pass either, indeed, without mentioning our colleague Ed Prendergast, who died last week. He was a young man in his late 20s. He was a producer on The Business Programme, and he had an accident. And I know that his organs have gone to help many people, and that act will provide some small measure of comfort for his family. And may he rest in peace.
May he rest in peace, Sean. And can I thank him and his family for doing what they've done? You know, and if I could mention, you know, one of the evidence as well, you're going to have in the marathon on Monday a guy called Ernesto Antonio, who's 15 years transplanted, but he wears a t-shirt said, "I'm doing this for my donor," and he's well known, wins medals at every transplant games we go to.
Well done to him. Seamus Egger, thank you very much indeed
for
coming to studio.
Pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.